Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you company for another episode of the show. If this is your first time visiting our show, well, welcome. It's great to have you here. And if you've been around a few times, well, welcome back. It is wonderful to have your company again as well. Now, this whole program is designed to help you grow and scale your business, and it's been built on the idea that the best ideas for business often come from outside the industry. Now, equally, we know that if you want to grow and scale your practice, you want to have access to other specific kinds of information as well, which is why we created a sister publication for this podcast. That sister publication is called the Savvy Dentist Magazine, and it's been put together by practice owners for practice owners to help them on their business ownership journey. Now, you'll have access to legal advice, HR advice, accounting information, marketing information, fit-out information, and of course, everything between IT, ordering, inventory, all that sort of stuff that is important to run a great practice is in the magazine. And we are really delighted to bring this to you. It's a totally free resource. And if you want to get a copy of it, all you need to do is head across to our website, which is SavvyDentist.com/magazine, and you can grab a free copy there for yourselves. It's a physical magazine and a digital magazine. So whichever format you prefer, you can grab it. No problems at all. We hope that that, along with the podcast, are going to be the tools, the go-to resources that you need to grow and scale your practice. We're totally committed to helping dentists on that journey. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, some of the best ideas come from outside our industry. And today, I'm joined by a very special guest. Now, many of you won't know the name of this guest, but I guarantee you would have heard her voice before, especially if you've ever uttered the phrase, "Hey Siri." Because when Siri answers you back, that's actually the voice of Australian voice actor Karen Jacobson coming back at you. And Karen is an amazing person. She is a singer and a musician by training, and she's a voice actress as well. And she moved across to the United States and found herself in a role where we now know her as the GPS girl, navigating us here, there, and everywhere as we go about our daily activities. Now, Karen's journey is really interesting and fascinating. There's lots of really good parallels here for practice owners. It's all about navigating your way, no pun intended, through life and through business. And Karen actually talks about five key ways to get back on track if you've got off track. And this is really, really important. I think if you've ever run a business and you felt like this isn't quite going the way I want to go, or things aren't quite right, or something just doesn't feel quite as it ought to, this is the episode for you. There's so many good things in here that Karen shares that are really pertinent and relevant based on her own experiences, but transfer across every industry, including dentistry, that are going to help you on your practice journey. So I really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Karen. She's really warm, really bubbly, really lovely. And I'll tell you, she is just like Siri, calm, cool, collected, and amazing. So without any further ado, here's Karen Jacobson. Karen, thank you so much for joining us all the way from the Whitsundays. How are you today?
Oh, it is a gorgeous day in the Whitsundays. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Every day is a gorgeous day in the Whitsundays, isn't it? It's beautiful.
It is, and actually a lot of people don't quite know where that is. It's a mystical, mysterious land, but it's in North Queensland, right next to the Great Barrier Reef, Airlie Beach, Hamilton Island. Might be familiar names, but that's where I live now.
Your voice has been in my ears and the ears of many, 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 many people over the years because you are affectionately known as the voice of Siri. I'm really keen to understand and explore how that came about because you grew up in North Queensland. Tell me a bit about your background. How did you find your way into voice acting? I know you had an interest in a background or professional background in singing, but how does that translate all the way across to being Siri?
I was born and raised in Mackay, only 2 hours from here in North Queensland. And when I was growing up, I saw on television the most important and most influential person in the entire world when I was 7 years of age. And that person was Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, wow.
And when I saw her on TV, my life changed. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to become a professional singer and move to America. He was this blonde Australian performer who'd gone to America and everybody loved her and I wanted to be just like her. So that is the core of my dream being blossoming and being drawn to a career in singing and in particular to move to the United States. So fast forward, and I was living in Sydney in the 1990s And I had started out in studio work, jingle work, singing those little songs for commercials, and through that got into voiceover work. And I had an amazing agent and was very busy for the entire 1990s, running around from studio to studio in Sydney. You couldn't turn the radio or the TV on without hearing my speaking voice or singing voice on commercials. And at a certain point, I realized that I had stopped short of my original goal, that I was a professional singer and voiceover artist in Sydney, but what I'd really dreamed of was to be a professional singer and songwriter and move to America. And around that time, I was studying with a vocal teacher called Kerry Bedell. Now, why that's important is I had been suffering from chronic anxiety all the way from childhood.
Oh, wow.
So bad that I would have abdominal pains that when I had a performance or a piano exam coming up, my abdominal pains were so severe. I was home from school for a week. They'd send me for rounds of tests. They couldn't find anything wrong. They would just come out to my parents and say, oh, it's just nerves, Mr. and Mrs. Jacobson. That's what they called it in those days. So it was very confusing because I had this total passion and love for performing and being on stage, but my body was sending me these very confusing signals. So here I was about to move to America, realizing I was going to move to America. And through Kerry Bedell, my vocal teacher, I discovered that the value of rehearsing something 50 times was the same value as performing once or doing it for real once. And this was important because I was about to move to big, bad New York City.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that I'd had as a child, you know, I'm 31 years old at this point, and it was a case of the anxiety still had me. I didn't have it. I had tools, but it was still not something I had felt like I was in charge of. Mm-hmm. So I got to New York and I came up with a plan that if I could be on stage as often as possible, there would be less lag time for me to be anxious about it.
Yep.
Which is a pretty simple idea on the one hand, but actually very effective. And what I ended up doing was making myself available for shows as a songwriter and a singer, a performer, for money, for no money, as a guest for somebody else's show, shows in my own right. And I was on stage, you know, 4 and 5 nights a week. There was less time, lag time, to be anxious. And I built up the ability to break through that. So I find myself in New York. I'm performing as often as I possibly can. I really went there to focus on my original songs and to write and perform and record with great professionals there after 10 years of piano bar, playing and singing covers in 5-star hotels in Sydney. And at one point, a client was looking for a native Australian female voiceover artist living in the northeast of the United States.
Tick all those boxes.
I ticked all those boxes and I saw that brief. I thought, this is a description of me. And I went to the audition. And would you believe that was really the occasion that really changed my life?
When you went for that audition, now I'm assuming that was the audition that ended up becoming the Siri job. Did you know what it was when you were going for the audition, or was it a fairly nondescript advertisement for voiceover artistry?
I'd done long voice systems previously, where it was, you know, 1,000 prompts, and I think that took 8 hours or 10 hours or something like that. But this particular job, the answer is no. I didn't know fully what it was going to be. They told me that they needed me to record for 50 hours.
Yes, wow.
And they needed to record that over a 3-week period, so only maximum of 4 hours a day, so my voice did not sound fatigued or tired at all. And I was taken up, or I flew up to Ithaca, New York, upstate New York, and they put me in a hotel and they took me to the studio for 4 hours a day. They wanted my voice to sound calm and consistent.
Okay.
And I'd record for 4 hours, go back to my hotel room and rest my voice and write songs for 3 weeks. So they did know it was going to be some kind of voice system, text-to-speech it was called at the time. And it would be used in a variety of ways. I don't recall a very clear description of what it was going to be used for, but just lots of different uses. And at that point, the GPS technology was not available in the civilian world, only in the military world.
Yep.
So I did know that that was part of it. And how I found out that my voice was in devices was a girlfriend called me 2 years later, because I went back to my life as a singer and songwriter in New York. 2 years later, she called me. She said, Karen, my husband and I were driving from Maine down to New York City after the holidays, after the Christmas holidays, and I bought my husband one of those new GPS thingos. So we put it on, and he said, oh, let's put it on the Australian voice. So we did. We put it on the Australian voice. And oh, my God, Karen, it's you. It's your speaking voice in the GPS. And I turned to my husband and I said, oh, no, I bought you Karen Jacobson for Christmas. And that's how I found out that my speaking voice is in what is now over a billion GPS and smartphones and elevators and cruise ships and software applications around the world, telling people where to go and what to do while I'm chatting with you right now on this podcast.
Wow. Okay, so I have to ask, do you have a favorite Hey Siri question? Do they tell you to, like, seriously, because I have asked Siri lots of questions over the years, and I'm curious, is there a most requested or do you get any insights around that?
I don't. That was all up to a team of engineers. I do have some really lovely conversations with people. Sometimes they want to tell me the voice that they call really their GPS or their guidance voice rather than their voice for the assistant voice. And I've had some really fun ones like Mrs. Bossy Pants and stories like I had a letter from this gorgeous little girl. She was 10 years old and she wrote me a letter and she said, dear Karen, you've been with our family for 4 years now and we take a lot of trips with you, giving us the directions. And we know your name is Karen, but we call you Zoe after our pet bird who died.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, I get the full gamut, but generally it's just so delightful the way people want to connect. And I know people ask, and especially the kids, that kids ask Siri a lot of questions and are like a companion. So I definitely get some very excited people wanting to have, you know, selfies together and share about the wonderful trips we've taken together.
So what do you ask Siri?
I am new to Siri really working. You know, for a lot of years, I would ask Siri something and it wouldn't work. I don't know if it was the settings on my phone. I don't know what was going on in the ether, but my husband and my son had much more success, but for me, no. Just disaster. But for the first time recently, we have a car. Well, first of all, now we have a car at all, because in New York City, living there for 20 years, I didn't have a car. But now in the Whitsundays, it's a car culture, and unfortunately I have to have a car. And the car we now have connects in magically to the in-dash system, which we didn't have before. And so I'm able to ask Siri to make phone calls for me.
Okay.
And that is pretty exciting.
Okay. Happy days. So
yes.
So do you ever play tricks with your family when you're driving around now that you're in the car? And you need to navigate somewhere. Do you you've reached your final destination for them?
I don't do that with my family, no. But I do, from time to time, I'll be in a car with friends and there'll be some occasion that is just truly, you can't make it up. And sometimes, you know, in the past there have been occasions, I know my dad at one stage had two GPSs set up in the front of his vehicle and he liked to have two, so he had a variety of directions. And then I've been in the back seat. He's done a lot of, you know, driving around Australia situation. Yeah. It's been very fun because sometimes I'm in the back seat then cross-referencing backseat driving like another route. So, we've had some funny moments.
Oh, good for you. So you get to America, you're performing 4 to 5 nights a week. Hopefully that helps tame the anxiety and you obviously get through that. And then you respond to the audition. You do your recording over the 50 hours over a couple of weeks. You go back to life. How has life changed for you now that you are Siri?
It didn't change very much initially, but when word got out there and I started to receive some media attention about it, there was this delight from people to share their stories with me, and a familiarity, like an immediate familiarity and excitement. And I knew there was something in it, but it took me a while to put together. And ultimately, I realized there was a brand to create. And I made that connection between directions in the car and directions in life and business. And my brand evolved. I took that word recalculating and created these five directions for recalculating in business and in life to navigate change powerfully. You know, that analogy being that when you're device says recalculating, it means you might have taken a wrong turn, but the satellites work their magic, and in a few quick turns you're back on track. And what if we could use that analogy in our lives to course correct quickly and with less drama and pain as human beings, whether it be in a small way in our everyday life or when those major life recalculations come along and changes come along. So how that's changed my life is I now speak as a keynote speaker to organizations and associations around the world. And I've written two books and just really have incorporated those useful messages on navigating change into my concerts, and now have keynote concerts as well. I write and record a lot of music, mm-hmm. and I think I've got my 13th album coming up.
I can see some albums over your shoulder.
Yes. And so it's a part of my persona and my brand, but also of my ethos. I'm someone who's wired to look for how to make things better and how to improve things.
So can we have a quick chat about that? Because I think that's really interesting, because, you know, to take that concept of recalculating, which I think is really important, not just in business but in life more broadly, because life is never a straight line. And I think you've only got to be alive for a short period of time before you encounter setbacks or disappointments of some kind. And being able to course correct or adjust or find your way through all of that is going to be really critical. And obviously you found your way through your own anxiety around performing by just doing lots and lots of it really regularly to limit that short space. That was perhaps your recalculation, maybe a version of recalculating. What do you mean by the term recalculating? How do you find your direction back to your path? What's that look like in practical terms?
So I describe it as being able to begin anew. We all know that feeling when we're of natural excitement, when something new is happening that we are looking forward to or we are really happy about. And it's finding a way to even out our emotional experience so the highs aren't quite so high, the lows aren't quite so low, but we can have those, but to be able to bring us back to this even, steady, solid place of being able to think clearly. Recalculating, I have described this, created this five directions for recalculating so that there is an actual process. There are some people who really like to know that when they go off track in their own mind or in their own lives, and they've seen that they have something to go to. So that process is to notice you are off route. You can only do something about it when you've noticed. And we've all had those experiences where we've actually been off track for a while. And then we realize, and it's at the moment we notice we can do something. The second direction is to be willing to change direction, to be willing to do things differently. This is the most challenging aspect of recalculating with others and with ourselves, because if we are not willing to do things differently, we're going to stay in that stuck state. To notice we're off route, to be willing to change direction. Number three is to clarify your destination. We think we're headed somewhere. Something happens. We know we need to recalculate. We're noticing we're off route. We're willing and open to change direction. Now we need to clarify, okay, where were we headed? Are we still headed there with this new information that's come to light, or are we on a detour to that spot, or are we headed somewhere different? And this does not have to be a bad thing. It might be a much better match for what we now want with this new information coming to light. So clarifying your destination without making yourself wrong or beating yourself up is a key piece.
Is that challenging for people as well to actually change destination? Because you spoke about the willingness piece being quite tricky, but to kind of reassess and go, actually, I don't really want to go there anymore. I want to go somewhere else.
Takes so much courage. Oh, yeah. In leadership, in organizations. Can you imagine investing a lot of money into something, for example, and then things not quite unfolding the way you thought, and then your gut feeling, or what I like to call your inner GPS, is saying, we got to shift the way we're doing this. That's not actually where we were headed now. And I think I'm really talking more about much larger organizations. Can you imagine a leader then actually having the courage to share that with the executive team, or as the CEO being able to say, you know what, I thought that was where we were headed, but now we've had such a shift and a disruption in the industry. We need to, if we want to move quickly, we've got to do X, Y, Z, but they've just invested a lot of money. That takes courage.
Sure does.
For many people, that is not so simple. Pretending it's okay is more simple.
It is, and we get caught up in that whole sunk cost bias where we've invested time, energy, and resource.
That's
therefore
right.
We're committed to the outcome we thought we were, but it might not be the best one. So we've got noticing, we've got willingness, we've got clarify the destination. What's the fourth step?
When you are clear again, okay, we're going to head here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what feels right. That's what makes sense. We're on board. The next stage is to embrace the steering wheel. This is really about getting ourselves ready to go for it. It's putting your hands on the steering wheel. It's taking a deep breath. It's moving from the passenger seat to the driver's seat, G-ing yourself up and going, okay, now we're in gear. So it's to embrace that new idea, that new direction. And the fifth direction is to accelerate. When you know where it is you are going to be headed, it's to take action, because ideas are wonderful. I love creativity, and where it's at is action. Action is where the rubber meets the road, and to accelerate is important. And often when we have a new direction and it comes with an enthusiasm and a natural excitement and an energy. So to harness that in that moment is important, and it may not always come at the most convenient time, like 3 o'clock in the morning or out of work hours or very early in the morning, but to be able to harness that and use it. It's powerful energy,
mm-hmm.
whether that might be writing the proverbial list on the pad and paper, padded pen next to the bed, or to write, you know, to just jot it down or to search something up, to send that email, to call someone and share that information with them. But that kind of energy is important to listen to.
Wow. So there is that inner GPS that you speak about, and listening to that and driving that and embracing the steering wheel. What happens when you get all of these things in alignment? What's the next thing? What do you see? What do you notice?
What it provides is a space, you know, it's a relief and a space, like a space of possibility. If we need to recalculate, it's because things aren't working the way that we would love them to be working. And when we notice that and start to take these steps and do something about it, at the end of that, we've got the relief of, okay, now I'm on track. I know what I'm doing. I know why I'm doing it. I know where I'm headed. It's a constant process, though. This is an all-day, everyday kind of situation if we're really willing to listen to ourselves and stay awake. This is to be fully engaged in life.
We spoke a little off-air about possibility being something that you felt was under threat or perhaps diminishing in the eyes of some people, and the importance of maintaining it and nurturing it and making sure that as we go through life, we're open to it. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your experiences living in the United States versus Australia. Now, I'm not here to kind of elevate one and bash the other, but one of the things I've noticed about going to the United States is they think big, they dream big dreams. And I'm curious, is that something you noticed as well? And how do we as Australians kind of overcome some of our perhaps natural reservations to start embracing that possibility? Because I agree with you. I think it's really important that if we're going to make shifts in our life, we've got to first believe they're possible.
One of the major attractions for me about moving to America and why I lived there for 20 years and why I would still be living there right now if the pandemic hadn't turned my life upside down and led me to be here, which is, you know, it's actually a match at this point in my life for other reasons, is the encouraging, intrinsic nature of the American condition. And America, for all of its challenges, is a place where possibility is alive and where dreaming dreams and working toward them is encouraged, not discouraged. And it's an atmosphere of encouragement. So I arrived in the year 2000 and said, I'm here to have a career as a singer and songwriter. I want to perform on the biggest stages in the world. And the reaction over there was, oh my gosh, it's so exciting. How can I help you? Who can I introduce you to?
Wow, that's awesome.
In Australia, that is not my experience. Huh. And we don't have to make it right or wrong. It's just different. But my vision for making the world, uplifting the world and inspiring and shining light, like this is how I'm wired, how I was always wired. And I found that in America, that was a match for me and what I'm up to. I do find it way less welcoming for that kind of enthusiasm for making things better here in Australia. And I do find that challenging. It doesn't deplete me in quite the same way as it did when I was younger before living in America. But also I now have a vast group of loved ones in the United States that I am in and professional contacts who also generally become loved ones because that's how I am in my life and I love to connect with people and with the work that I do. You know, I love people, so I connect and become friends with many clients and I'm in contact with them, with many people in the United States frequently, which means I am able to continue to operate in that way without necessarily having the depletion of what would you want to do that for, which is an attitude that I find pretty frequently here.
One of the things I'm picking up from that is it's important to surround yourself with people who are supportive and the value of a
great
peer group, right, is what I'm hearing come out of this.
Yes.
And your peer group, although you live in Australia, your support network professionally and personally in some senses, of course you've got supporters here in Australia, that goes without saying, but you've got a large network overseas as well.
I do.
Help me understand how you see the value of that support network or that peer group, how you've been able to cultivate that. Because the reason I'm asking that question is I've only just met you, but I can already tell you're quite a warm, welcoming, engaging kind of person. And there'll be other people who are a little more introverted who probably find that a little more challenging to do. And I'm just curious if you've got any, I guess, insights about moving all the way to another country, like almost as far as you can go, not quite, but, you know, close enough, and then inserting yourself into a new society and making that work. Because one of the things I found as a dentist in the Navy is I was always going from one base to the other and I never had friends. And so you'd have to kind of quickly form a social network and leverage that. And it's been a wonderful thing to learn to do. How have you managed to do that for yourself? Because I think there'll be people listening to this podcast who are screaming out for a really supportive peer group and they're not quite sure how to, I guess, break into one.
What a wonderful discussion. I have written a couple of books and in one of them I lay out very clearly it's who you surround yourself with. Surround yourself with uplifting people, like-minded people, people who are wanting to create a beautiful environment, a nurturing clinic. However you are, whatever you are up to, not only in your life but in your business or vice versa. I am an enthusiastic, energized person by nature. And then I've done so many programs in leadership and communication and in spirituality as well, you know. And so I'm just naturally now an exuberant person. And if that's not, if you're listening to this and that's not your style, you do not have to be that way. And in fact, the best way to be is what feels the best to you. We are talking about thinking and thoughts and possibility, and it's the thinking that attracted me to America. People who think affirmatively rather than knocking everything down. And there's an undertone of negativity that I don't care for. And it's everywhere. That's not just in Australia. Hmm. It's not in every person in Australia, but it's culturally there's an aspect of that that I don't resonate with. But in terms of finding uplifting people to surround ourselves with, well, there are many, of course, professional associations, and you can gravitate. You start looking, you can find others. Now, I find that having a mastermind group is an essential piece of my well-being and my growth. And if someone's listening here and is looking to surround themselves with, you know, uplifting people, and I just start one. Yeah. You know, you'll know two or three or five people in your world that you could ask. And if you've never done that before and don't know how to do it, guess what? You can just make it up. I've made it up. I've done it repeatedly and just invited people from not even just my neighborhood or my city, but around the country or the world, and say, look, I've got this idea. How about we get on a call once a month, once every 2 weeks, every Monday, whatever suits, and then start to talk about what everybody would like to get out of that. And gee, it's when you have a group of people all committed to living a great life and creating a great life, magic happens.
It sure does. And can I let you on a little secret? This is actually for the listeners here. Karen doesn't know this, but the way I started my own business was exactly that, because I was looking for a group of people that I wanted to hang around with, and exactly what you described, I couldn't find it, so I started it. And so I'd encourage everyone to follow Karen's advice, because if you can't find it, start it and be the organizer of it, and that's terrific. Karen, in your world and in your experience, coming back to the possibility, what does the future hold for you? Because I'm curious to think, you've accomplished so much. You've had a successful music career. You've had, obviously, a massive career as a voice artist. What does the possibility thinking mean for you in your future looking forward?
Thank you for asking. I'm in a very creative part of my life. So I'm writing songs and recording them frequently. I have two new albums coming out in a couple of months' time, and then another album coming out later in the year. It feels like the creativity gods just kind of have unleashed on me, and I'm really excited about the writing and the music with uplifting messages that I'm creating and releasing. So I'll be continuing to do that, and then performing concerts. I am very involved in the local area, in this regional area of the Whitsundays. I've co-founded the Whitsundays Songwriting Festival. This is our third year in October of 2024, where we bring professional songwriters to this region and give local emerging songwriters an opportunity to be mentored by them. And then we have a residency and a public performance. It's amazing what we've created. And now I am chair of the Whitsundays Writers Festival, which is coming back after 7 years. So we will be having a literary festival here in the Whitsundays in September, and that will be the plans are for that to be annual, where we bring award-winning national and international authors to the area. So there are ways I'm very engaged in elevating and expanding the arts and culture presence here in the Whitsundays, and that feels fantastic. A lot more travelling and performing is in my future.
Sounds like you're going to need to navigate a path through that.
You know, it's for all of its massive challenges and difficulties, the pandemic gave me a space to really think very deeply about how I want to spend my time. And it's opened up a lot of opportunities for me to do that and to contribute certainly to future generations and especially to regional artists. That's important to me.
Yeah, lovely. Karen, I'm also aware that you have the GPS Girl website. So if people want to find out more about what you do, is that the best place to head across for public speaking and keynotes yes. and that sort of work?
Yes, and I do that frequently, yes.
Okay. So, ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about Karen's public speaking work, head across to the GPS School. But otherwise, when the albums drop, will they drop online? Will they drop in store? I'm not across the music publishing business, so what are the cool kids doing with that these days?
Well, you know, we're all trying to figure that out. But how I'm going to do it is I'm going to do some release concerts in some different cities and towns in Australia and in the United States. And it's karenjacobson.com is my music website where people can hear it. And then it's on all the streaming platforms, and then my music videos are on YouTube. So I actually love to film music videos in this region of the Whitsundays and showcase the gorgeous beauty here. A song on my last album was called Take Me to Hayman Island.
Oh, nice.
And Hayman Island is a very, very beautiful place and was special to me with childhood memories. And I had the great joy of filming that music video with a crew and a team on Hayman Island. So that was very special.
Karen, I feel like the only quote that I can come up with now as we wrap up is, and I'll probably throw it to you, is it feels like we've reached our final destination.
I think we have reached our destination.
Oh, there we go. There it is. That's the voice. Karen, I want to take a moment to thank you. You've been really wonderful and generous with your time today, and such an extraordinary life, such an interesting and fascinating life, and a rich tapestry like everyone's life is, but with a couple of really, really fascinating side journeys interwoven amongst it all. I can't wait to hear your new album. I'm looking forward to that. Seeing more of your public speaking and would love to get you back to have a chat to our dental crew at some point as well. If you're up for that, would very much like to invite you to that.
I would love that. And I would just like to say that it is never too late to recalculate, even in the most dire moments when we think there's just no hope. It is never too late to recalculate. And also that I'd love to connect with people on LinkedIn if they're interested in connecting there.
Well, once again, Karen, thank you so much for your time and look forward to talking soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.